From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of November 2022, the last trading day of the month. Today, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated, and Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist, will be here too from the U of I to talk about tile installation and its economic properties, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day at $6.62, down 3¾. The March at $6.67, 2½ lower. And May futures down 2¾ at $6.65¼. January beans at $14.69½, up a dime. March $14.75½, 9½ cents higher. And next year's November up 3 at $13.99. Bean meal at $4.1770, up 9¢. And the bean oil for the day down $1.31 at $75.23. Greg Johnson of TGM, Total Grain Marketing, from right here in Champaign County, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Todd. Good to be here.
As I watched the market throughout the day on Wednesday, it's been, well, on both sides, actually, of green and red. I'm wondering what you're thinking about the market as a whole and how much underpinning it still has, really short of corn. And the soybean crop is still being lifted, I think, by Argentina, though I think they actually started to sell again today because of the soy dollar. Is that right?
That's correct. There's a limited amount of selling going on because of the soy dollar. It's advantageous for the Argentine farmers to sell beans and take advantage of that. But some of them, even with the advantageous currency manipulation, are holding off on selling beans because, as you mentioned, it is dry down there. They're getting a few scattered showers today, but then the forecast for next week is returning back to hot and dry down there. And even southern Brazil looks a little on the dry side. So that's really helped the bean market out. We've had a good rally on beans here in the last couple of weeks. The wheat market, on the other hand, is going down, and we're at three-month lows, and corn is stuck in the middle, not sure which way it wants to go. It doesn't know if it wants to follow the beans higher or the wheat lower, and as a result, corn has been pretty much stuck in a range over the last 3 months, whereas beans are going up and wheat's going down.
An issue that has been a hot topic on the national news, and I think less so maybe at the moment for the agricultural community, though it means a great deal, is the potential for a rail strike in December. It certainly appears that both Republicans and Democrats will come together to make sure that that does not happen. Is that the case?
Well, that's what we'd like to think. I don't know about the procedural thing. There's some talk that even one senator in particular ran for president not too many years ago, Mr. Sanders, is sympathetic to the unions and may try to delay the procedural outcome of this, try to, you know, keep it from being discussed and getting voted on. So hopefully one person can't hold this up. I'm hopeful that if it can be advanced and discussed, that we can get people back to work and prevent a potential strike. We've got till December 9th, and hopefully we can get stuff worked out before then.
What does domestic usage lay of the land look like for corn and soybeans at this point?
Domestic usage looks good so far. It's the exports that have been lagging behind on corn, and I guess that should be expected. We only have a 1.1 billion carryout, so we have to cut back a little bit on the demand side, and it seems like exports are where we're cutting back on. But ethanol usage has been hanging in there. Feed usage has been hanging in there. It's just the exports that are falling behind pace. And like I said, with a 1.1 billion carryout, maybe that's what we need. Otherwise, we would run out of corn and have even higher prices. So the function of the market is to ration out what supply we have. And I think that's what the market's trying to do right now.
Does basis show you the strength in this marketplace?
Oh, yes. Yes, there's very little carry in the market. If you look out from December corn to March, May or July, there's very little carry, and we're seeing processors and end users really improve their basis. So we're really seeing, you know, a demand an increase in demand basis from the end user If the board's not going to go up, then the basis has to do the work, and that's what we're seeing. The futures market is sideways, and so the basis has been taking on most of the work. We've seen anywhere from a 5 to 10 cent basis improvement this week in the corn market.
Your expectation, will that continue?
I think there's another nickel in the basis. It may take a couple of weeks, but I think the basis continues to get stronger. Unless we see some kind of a rally in the futures market to do the work, then farmers probably would sell corn on a rally. But absent a futures rally, yeah, I think the basis continues to get stronger in corn especially.
I saw that Cargill purchased Owensboro Grain in Kentucky on the auspices, it said, of being able to crush beans and then ship the oil down the Mississippi River to the refineries to be turned into renewable diesel. I'm wondering how much demand and or offset that might create for the marketplace, not just from that plant, but in general for renewable diesel.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think it will create quite a bit of demand for soybean oil. The problem is you crush a soybean to get 11 pounds of oil, and now you're left with 48 pounds of meal. So the 80% of the bean is the product is soybean meal. So you really can't economically crush oil beans for the just for the oil. You have to have an outlet for the meal. And so that's going to be an interesting factor to watch is what, you know, will we be able to find, you know, increased demand for the soybean meal. Yes, there's an artificial stimulus, artificial demand for the oil, but you can't just crush beans for the oil alone, I don't think, unless the price of oil is dramatically high.
And it'd be interesting to watch. Anything else for the rest of the week? And then, of course, we have next week's WASDE report, too.
That's probably the big thing right now. It already feels like we're in holiday mode. The volume has been extremely light this week, and I guess I anticipate that to be the case between now and Christmas. I hope something happens, but maybe the report next week will give us something to talk about. But it seems like we're kind of in holiday mode already.
Well, a light trade generally means a lot of volatility in the market. It can be quick. Are you telling producers if they want to make sales that they should put in offers to get that done?
Exactly. We've seen a lot of times in the night session, one or two orders will move this market, you know, 10, 15 cents in the bean market, move corn 5 or 7 cents. And then once we get into the day session, when there's more volume, then we're back to our normal trading ranges. So, yes, we're definitely encouraging producers to get offers in on both corn and soybeans, because you just never know when the market might pick up even for a minute or two.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM, Total Grain Marketing. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. He's penned an article for the FarmDoc Daily website you should check out today. It'll be there at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Evaluating returns necessary to justify the installation of tile drainage. Thank you, Gary, for talking to me about this. Why did you decide that it was worth writing a FarmDoc Daily article about?
Yeah, well, we see a lot of investment in tile drainage. And, you know, tile drainage can be sort of a complicated investment to evaluate. And we came up with a simple little framework that can be implemented in Excel to look at, you know, the break-even yearly benefit that an individual has to have to justify the installation of that tile.
Well, let's talk about that. But first, are we able to download the Excel spreadsheet from the FarmDoc website?
Actually, there's nothing to download. There is a formula that we put in the article that you plug into your Excel spreadsheet and go from there. And we give an example of that spreadsheet in the article itself.
Okay. Well, tell me how it works.
So typically what you see is you make a large investment in tile, which includes the installation of the tile and the tile itself. In the article, we use an example of $1,000 per acre, which is roughly the cost now of a rather intensive systematic tile system. So $1,000 to get it all in. And then you have to make a decision about what you want your rate of return or your discount rate to be. We're using 8%, which is about the cost of debt right now. And then you also have to determine how long of life you want that to give to that title. And that title is going to be a long run investment, probably 50 to 100 years, and maybe even longer than that, actually. But once you get above 50, it really doesn't matter on this. You put those three items in, and then you calculate using the payment function, which you're just calculating the payment, yearly payment needed to cover the $1,000 installation cost in this example. And in that example, 8% discount rate, 50 years of life, the yearly benefit has to be above $81.74. So that's just a good sort of screening tool to give a person a feel for what the yearly benefits have to be. And that would, by the way, that 81.74 translates into roughly 16 bushels of corn or 7 bushels of soybeans, given long-run prices, not today, but long-run prices of 450 for corn and 1050 for soybeans.
Does that generally pay for itself in that case?
So, you know, tile drainage is obviously depends on the site-specific characteristics. There was a study that looked in soybeans across a wide variety and found that the yields increased by 4%. So if you take that number, 4% times 50 bushels, you're in the ballpark where this will cover cost. I would note things have gotten more difficult to cover costs these days because of two factors. The installation costs have gone up with everything else, obviously, and higher interest rates do matter. I mean, if we cut that 8% down to 4%, which it was, you know, for the past 5-6 years, you would halve that $81 cost to something like $40. So there's a couple things that have happened in the past year or so. The higher interest rates because of Fed actions and the higher costs that are making it more difficult to justify it. But most cases, it still comes out good.
In the article, you mentioned a couple of other consequences. There is a tax consequence.
Yeah, so tax consequences are not included in this article. And if you, in this, that methodology, if you include it, it generally doesn't make a lot of difference, but the tax, so the installation itself is a taxable event. Many people write it off against current income using Section 179 or double or bonus depreciation. If there's anything left, the tile drainage investment will be deducted using normal tax schedules. Also, you know, the benefit, the interest if you're using debt is a taxable event as well as any benefits. So that if you wanted to include taxes would have to be included in that analysis. Again, this is a screening tool to get you close to what it needs to be.
What are the landowner benefits of installing tile?
So the landowner benefits, obviously, you need to get, the landowner needs to get a higher return from that land to justify the installation. If you're a share rent landowner, you get half of it immediately. And in those cases, under share rent, farmers will often work with the individual landowner to get that worth their while. Obviously, if you're a cash rent landowner, you need higher cash rents, but that depends on what level of cash rent you're already at, whether that's justifiable.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. You may read his articles each and every Tuesday on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, or catch them on our website on Tuesday as well at willag.org, willag.org. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, online at worldweather.cc. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us. Let's start in the United States.
I'm a lot colder today than I was yesterday, that's for sure. So tell me about the setup that brought us this cooler weather.
Yeah, you know, it's that time of the year, and it's hard to believe, but it is the last day of November, you know, and normally the air gets a little colder at this time of the year. And that certainly has been the case. We've had a deep cold air mass up in Canada that's been kind of parked there for a while. It's all part of the La Nina phenomenon. La Nina tends to put a lot of colder than normal air in western Canada and sometimes the northwest U.S. and north central U.S. during the latter part of November and on into the winter season. And that's certainly what has taken place over the past few weeks. And the cold just built up too much. It broke right through the jet stream and came falling down into the central part of the U.S. The jet stream over this next 10 days is going to get very strong. And so what's going to happen is that the cold is still going to be, the core of the cold is still going to be up in Canada. And with the winds aloft becoming so much stronger, the air is going to get trapped up that way. So this cold shot we have right now, it's probably as cold as it's going to get. We may get another little punch of cool air coming through at some point during the latter part of the weekend and next week. But these will be relatively minor surges of cold. And like I said, the core of the coldest air will be trapped up in Canada. Now, what's interesting as we go forward through December and into January, the Arctic will get colder because, you know, the days are getting shorter, there's less sunlight. So that cold will build up and eventually it'll become so cold up there in Canada that it's going to undercut the jet stream and we will see more cold air in the central and eastern parts of the U.S., but it's probably going to come much later in December and really probably more like January and February. So we do expect it to get cold and stay cold once that takes place, but we're a few weeks away from that.
You know, as I think about the top of the planet, it gets very cold and it oscillates those masses to some extent. Will it spill cold, very, very cold air into Ukraine and Russia? I'm wondering about the power issues there and their lack thereof and what that means.
Yeah, you know what? We're still not getting weather data from Ukraine because they don't have any power to get it to us. So it is definitely a serious situation over there. There is going to be an accumulation of cold in northern Europe and parts of northern Russia as we go forward through this same 10-day period coming up. But as of the moment, the same strong jet stream that we're going to have in North America is also going to be playing out in Europe. And that will keep the cold trapped again at higher latitudes for a while. And Ukraine will stay away from the absolute coldest conditions, as will much of Central and Southern Europe. But just like we talked a little bit ago, as time progresses and the cold accumulates, we will eventually create some significant southward moving cold air masses in Europe, as well as in North America, and that will create some problems. And I am concerned about it for the Ukrainians, as well as for Europeans, just simply because the Europeans have a short supply of energy coming in from Russia. So it's that whole neighborhood over there that's going to be taking it on the chin if they do get a cold winter. And I think there's potential that late in December, more likely, again, January and February, there may be some notable cold periods. And so it could become a real serious situation for those folks.
Speaking of serious situations, let's turn your attention to South America, where this week some have cut already very earlier in the season. Corn and soybean prospects, particularly for Argentina, because of the drought and the hot weather. What is happening for them this week?
Yeah, we just got some rain last night across the heart of their corn and soybean production region from Cordoba into portions of Buenos Aires, a very rich crop area. Most of the rain totals were running from 0.3 inches to an inch. There was a handful of locations, I suppose, that had some 1 to 2.5 inch amounts. And in that little pocket, of course, there was some more meaningful relief. But the rest of the country is just not going to get this rain. There will be up to 0.6 inches of moisture to the north of this corridor in central and northern Argentina today and tomorrow. But that's not enough. As you had just mentioned, it's been hot. It's going to get hot again late in the weekend and next week. Temperatures will be in the 90s to over 100 degrees. And that 0.6 inch of moisture will be gone in a single day of 80 degree temperature. So the situation is really very poor. Santa Fe, western portions of Entre Rios, and neighboring areas of Chaco and also southeastern Santiago del Estero. This is all central and northern parts of Argentina. They have been missing one rain event after the other. The top and subsoil is rated very short. 0.6 inch of rain is not going to make any difference whatsoever. And so we are looking at another 10 days of pretty serious stress for those areas. In that corridor that got the rain last night, they have enough moisture for crops to improve with, but they will dry down eventually. It looks like they have another chance for showers and thunderstorms, though, in about a week. So maybe some of that key production area will manage to eke out okay yield potentials, but we certainly need to see much better rainfall over these next several weeks in order to get that crop back anything close to what it should be. And it, obviously, we're not going to get it all the way back to normal, I don't believe.
And a quick tour of the producing areas in Brazil.
You know, Brazil has had a wonderful spring for them. I'm sure there's folks that are rooting the other way here, but they've had timely rainfall throughout the country. Temperatures have not been hot this year. There's actually been a little bit of a cooler bias, which has helped them tremendously because the rainfall has been lighter than normal in the west and southern parts of the country. But with the temperatures a little bit cooler than usual, they've managed to get by with the lighter precipitation. Also, it's important to remember, if you're looking at percent of normal charts for Brazil, remember that normal rainfall in Brazil is far more rain than what the crop needs to develop. And having less than normal rainfall that is timely in that country will produce beautiful yields. And I think that's the road we're on right now. There is a problem with some low soil moisture in Mato Grosso, which is the nation's most important soybean producing state. But it's still early enough in the season that improved rainfall in another week can make a huge difference to that crop, and the crop will snap around. And that's exactly what's supposed to happen. As we get into this weekend and next week, showers and thunderstorms are going to become much more routine in these drier pocketed areas. And we're going to fix that, and we're going to end up with a good distribution of rain across the majority of the country, with temperatures staying in a seasonable range. So they're definitely on a road towards a big crop if this continues.
Hey, thank you much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.